Hello, and welcome to In the Privy Council, a podcast reviewing cases heard before the Judicial Committee of His Majesty's Most Honorable Privy Council, brought to you by the Legal Style Blog. I'm your host, Elijah Granite. This week, we are discussing the Trinidadian case of Garcia and Arima Door Holding Center Company, the citation for which is 2023 UKPC 31, TNT. As a reminder, because Trinidad and Tobago is a republic, this case will be decided directly by the Judicial Committee, rather than by His Majesty. This is a very short case, just 16 paragraphs, on a favorite topic of law students, adverse possession. The governing law in Trinidad and Tobago on this point is the Real Property Limitation Act, 1846, which sets a prescribed period of 16 years to recover land from the point the right to recover the land so accrues. After that period, the squatter can stay on the land and the title is extinguished. This law is modeled on the former English law in the Real Property Limitation Act 1833, and it was agreed that the English case law on that act, aside of course from a different limitation period, was the same as Trinidadian law. The property in question in Arima in Trinidad was occupied by the appellant and her mother under a tenancy that ended with a notice to quit on 29th March, 1996. In the time since then, both parties agreed that the appellant had remained in uninterrupted possession without the consent of the owner. In other words, the appellant was doing what was sufficient for adverse possession, with the requisite intention. The only remaining question is, for how long? The timeline here is simple and crucial. To repeat, on 29th March, 1996, the appellant was handed a notice to quit, which took effect on 30th April, 1996. However, the outstanding rent owed was not paid until 23rd August, 1996. Due to quite long and unexplained delay, the action for possession was not brought until 12th May, 2012. That is just more than 16 years from 30th April, 1996, but just less than 16 years from 23rd August, 1996. Thus, the question becomes, when did the right to possession accrue? Was it with the notice to quit, or with the payment of the outstanding rent? In the High Court, my lord, Mr. Justice Ramprasad, had found that the payment on 23rd August was for periods before the 30th April deadline, and therefore, accepting it was not consenting to continued occupation. That would suggest the claim is out of time. The landowner relied, successfully, on Section 9 of the 1843 Act. That says, so far as is relevant, when any person shall be in possession or in receipt of the profits of any land, or in receipt of any rent, as the tenant from year to year or other period, without any lease in writing, the right of the person entitled subject thereto, or of the person through whom he claims, to make an entry or distress, or to bring an action to recover such land or rent, shall be deemed to have first accrued at the determination of the first of such years or other periods, or at the last time when any rent payable in respect of such tenancy shall have been received, which shall last happen. So the landowner's argument, made only by written submissions to the board, was that 23rd August was the relevant date, because it was the last date on which rent was paid in respect of the tenancy. Now, for the board, my lord, Lord Leggett, disagreed with the landowner and the High Court and Court of Appeal. The deeming provision we just read, a provision that decrees a factual circumstance, had to be understood in the context of its function. The 1843 Act, as with its counterpart in England, was not exclusively determining when limitation occurred by this deeming provision, but rather as a non-exclusive method to settle cases involving doubt as to when the right initially accrued. The deemed provision complements the general limitation analysis, rather than replacing it. In this case, Section 9 of the 1843 Act was covering the gap where a periodic tenancy has outstanding rent that is paid later, since non-payment of rent does not actually terminate a common law tenancy. The purpose of Section 9 is precisely that a landlord can't claim that a tenant refusing to pay rent was still submitting to the landlord's title, since technically at common law, the tenancy continued to exist. And thus, the landlord is not able to argue that a very late possession claim is not out of time because, paradoxically, the tenant wasn't paying rent. However, where the tenancy was simply ended by a clear notice to quit, Section 9 could not possibly apply. Remember, the language speaks of being in possession of land as a tenant, and being subject to a tenancy. This could not possibly apply after a valid notice to quit. Thus, the position in both Trinidad and England was that, and here his lordship cited the learned editors of Jordan and Radley Gardner on adverse possession, that the deeming provisions did not apply where a tenant wrongfully remained on the land after the tenancy had been terminated. Thus, the board found that time began to run from 30th April 1996, and the claim for possession was therefore out of time, and any right to recover the land was lost to adverse possession. The board thus allowed the appeal and indicated it would declare the landowners, or rather, the soon-to-be former landowner's title to be extinguished. Turning now to our analysis of the case, remarkably this brief judgment manages to touch on three important themes. The first is the interpretation of statutes. When a law deems an arbitrary set of circumstances, it is crucial to carefully read and understand the provision in its context and purpose. Here, it would have been absurd to suggest that after a landowner terminated a tenancy, he could then rely on payment of outstanding rent to claim, to his benefit, that the tenancy he had terminated was continuing. Their Lordship's board quite rightly placed the provision in its context, and avoided a result that would have undermined the entire scheme of adverse possession. The second one is about legal research. The High Court and Court of Appeal appear to have interpreted the 1843 Act in complete isolation, relying only on deeming provisions without considering the case law or the statement of legal principle by the learned editors of the various specialist books on adverse possession. As the board showed, simply checking the relevant paragraphs in those books revealed immediately that the deeming provisions did not operate in this type of situation. It was a failure on the part of counsel below to not bring these matters to the lower court's attention. When researching a case, particularly where one is unfamiliar with the underlying law, the first recourse must be to the standard decisions and consensus, as enumerated, for example, in textbooks, so as to understand how precedent views the statute. There is no substitute for basic research. The final theme is also one of practice. The landowner had 16 years to try to recover possession, yet let it sit for more than 16 years after the notice to quit. Adverse possession often strikes people as unfair, squatters' rights are not popular, but again, the landowner here had 16 years to exercise its rights. Leaving things until the last minute is a risky strategy, and in this case, led to the title being extinguished. Well, thank you very much for listening to another episode of In the Privy Council, brought to you by the Legal Style Blog. I've been your host, Elijah Granite. If you want more legal content, visit our website, legalstyle.co.uk, or follow us on Twitter at @LegalStyleBlog. If you have any comments, suggestions, rants, or raves, the email of the podcast is editor@legalstyle.co.uk. We also welcome any ratings or reviews on your usual podcast platforms. Until next time, goodbye, and remember, together we aspire
Together, we achieve!